Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can find me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. And of course, it is Thursday. You know what that means. Mike Wall is back. You can find him on Twitter at MikeWall68. Mike, wish we were talking about a Packers victory, but it is amazing to be talking to you nonetheless. How the heck are you?
Andy, I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. Look forward to talking a little ball with you.
Yeah, as always, it's always a blast. Let's start there. Packers did not pick up a victory against the Minnesota Vikings. I guess, what were your overarching takeaways? Kind of the big thing I want to know from you is, this game's 28-0, of course. Is the story just kind of over right then and there? How much do you give them, you know, the credit for scoring the 22 unanswered, going on a, 29-3 run and making this sort of interesting with 10 minutes left in the fourth? Or was this... Yeah, how do you sort of analyze that when it's 28-0 to start? I'll put it that way.
Yeah, it's a great question, because you come away from a game like that when they did fight back, and you want to take something from that. If you're a fan, if you're a proponent of the Green Bay Packers, you want to take something away from that. Because you have to. Dropping down 28-0, spotting somebody 28 points in National Football League is absurd. And to do it with your derby hometown rival, that it's just absurd that would happen. I looked at it this way. You turn the live game off at halftime, but then you have to go back and watch the film at some point. And when you go back and watch the film, you see that, the reality was that they just made some, there's some groups that played really well in the first half. Unfortunately, they're net better than we are. Their receivers are better than our secondary. If they have somebody that can play catch, and they can play catch. Aaron Jones is a really good player. Yeah. He made a huge difference in the way they game plan. And we just had too many mistakes. And what you wonder, obviously, with Jordan Love is coming off of an injury. And you just see the kind of – you don't want to ever say that he was inaccurate. You want to say that the timing between him and the receivers are off. I think that's probably a more likely scenario. And you see, goes through two hands on the second interception. So there's some things going on there that are kind of uncharacteristic of this team. So you like to see that they snap back and start scoring in the second half. But then you, of course, Andy, you got to look at it and go, well, nobody plays defense in the second half when you're up 28-0. It's prevent the whole time. So listen, you a good team can't start a game down 28 points. I think that's really what you have to pull from this. This is a long-winded way of me saying there's a lot of young players that are getting playing time on this game, and it showed up in a number of ways. And I think that's okay early in the season. Sometimes you take L's like this, as long as those guys learn from those situations.
And that's really, you could tell what Matt LaFleur was emphasizing as well. And you could you could tell he was upset, especially on Monday in his press conference, of some of these mistakes aren't the first time that these mistakes have been made. And that's what he's more frustrated by, is that they're not learning from these mistakes. And it was very clear from the post game and from Monday that what he just wants is his team to learn from these and to not make them again. And to your point, I think this can be, and I talked to Paul Breddle about this yesterday, this can be fertilizer for this team that they can grow from, but they have to learn from it. Otherwise, this just becomes who they are as a team. I think they will. I think we saw a lot of the growth last year. I think they'll come together, but I agree with you. I think when it's 28-0 against your rival at home and it looks that bad to start, that to me is the story. And I love the fact that they didn't quit. I love that they got back into it, made it a game. But obviously too little too late. And I think a couple of the things were a little bit, not fluky, maybe just unfortunate. I want to go back to Jordan Love though, for a moment too. I know you're not a doctor, but I know you're very in tune with, how these players perform and get their bodies right and everything like that. What did you see from Jordan physically? Did you feel like this was more of a rust thing, like you mentioned, of just getting the timing right with the wide receivers? Or did you feel like, you know what, maybe that leg wasn't right. Maybe he wasn't planting on it correctly. Or, what did you kind of see from Jordan?
Well, what you see from Jordan is, quite frankly, something that we highlight every time you break down video on Jordan, is that his footwork, sometimes he thinks he has the arm strength that he doesn't.
Yeah.
And so his footwork isn't always great. It probably is exacerbated by having a lower limb injury. But there's a lot of times that you know, he doesn't step into throws and there's not quite the zip. And so that take, what is, you know, if you don't have good footwork, what does that take away? It's just intuitively, it takes away power and accuracy. So if you're lacking some of those and it's being multiplied because you're coming off an injury, you haven't been throwing, that can certainly have an impact. But, you know, having said that, it's like the first pick, they ran the dagger, the series before, and the linebacker didn't catch it that time. The linebacker caught it this time, you know, ran right at Christian Watson. They had the big blow up, but they have the pick. You see the second pick, you know, the middle of the field was going to be open all day when they were bringing the backside linebacker. He had two guys to throw to. One of them tried to catch it. The other one, yeah, I mean, so some of this stuff you go, okay, well, those are unfortunate. And then you just start looking at some of the drops. You know, I think Wicks had a couple that you'd like to have back. And those are where I look at and go, from a timing standpoint, we're just a little bit off. Yeah. You know, and so I look at more like it's a timing thing, not necessarily an injury. I'll say this. I know the doctors at the Green Bay for the Green Bay Packers, and they're not letting him on the field if he's not 100% clear.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. To me, it was a good thing that he played in this game, even though they didn't get the result. I think just needing to get in more in that rhythm and that timing. I've talked about this all week, so my apologies to my listeners for saying this again, but it just feels like that there could not be a worse start from a rhythm timing for to this season, where you go down to Brazil, you've got sort of the wonky field and the slipperiness, and then you've got two games with your backup quarterback. Then in week four, you bring Jordan back, try to get him reacclimated in the offense and go against a defense that is very unique and sort of a one of one for some of the stuff that they're doing. Just feels like they're going to need a little bit of time to get into rhythm. And I think this is a good game, even if they didn't get the win, just to get some of that rhythm and timing back. And hopefully it'll show up now in this Rams game, where they do have an opponent where I think hopefully they can take advantage of and get this offense going in its right direction.
Yeah, sir. I mean, the Rams are certainly, I mean, defensively, there's some areas of opportunity to exploit there. You know, the thing that was crazy, you know, for me at least, about watching the Minnesota tape and seeing what we had done a couple of weeks before and seeing how effective it was, particularly utilizing the other receivers. Yeah. You know, Josh Jacobs wasn't necessarily effective in Tennessee, but because they have to worry about Josh Emmanuel, then all of a sudden, you know, Jaden Reed goes off, all these other, you know, you start running the orbit motions, and all of that package really becomes difficult to defend. The same thing happened in Minnesota. We just didn't run it as much. So the Minnesota Vikings didn't show you anything that you hadn't already seen on tape. If you're really studying the game plan, this, they didn't do anything different. Like everything that you saw had already been seen. So it was a little bit surprising just the way that they went into the game. And, you know, sometimes I think, as a play caller, and I'm not trying to put myself, I'm putting myself in his shoes. I'm not trying to speak for him, but when you get your star guy back, your big money quarterback back, instead of going with what works, you go with, you know, what you think is best given his unique skill set. And it became very clear early on that maybe the better choice was to run the prior 2 weeks offense, or that version of that offense, against that system. Maybe more so than a rusty play action or rusty passing game with a quarterback who's been injured for the last 2 weeks.
I'm so glad you brought this up, because I think this brings up a really interesting question, because we hear all the time about how coaches have a game plan or a script for maybe first 15, 20 plays, 25 plays, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. A, sort of how does that work and how does that go about in practice? Because obviously you don't know exactly what game situations are going to come up, but B, when you get to your 14th play, whatever that is on that sheet or however that works, and you're down 21-0, how does that affect? Because they get to the 14th play and they're down 21-0 in this game. I have to imagine that that sort of takes you out of whatever game plan you had going into that situation.
Yeah, so just for your listeners, the way that the 15 plays, is that's an old West Coast offense thing. It started 30 years ago, I think, by Walsh, actually. And it was basically to get the guys on the same page. I mean, the reason that you did it originally so is that we could all look at the 15 plays and go, okay, I'm going to know these plays cold. Like, I know them against every defense. I'm super confident in what we're going to do. And what ends up happening is in those 15 plays, you're trying to show all your different, you know, different personnel groups in different down and distance situations. You try to show different formations, different motions. You're trying to get a really good feel for what or how that defense is going to adjust to what you can put on the field so you can build up the rest of your game plan. But they're all, like, they're not all first and 10 plays, and they're not all third and long plays, right? So you have these different stacks that you want to get to, but it's in the context of, okay, it's third and one. I'm not running play number three on my sheet. I'm running whatever my best third and one play is, right? And and you may or may not get past play six. You might get all 15, but it might take 65 plays to get all 15 of those. It just depends on how the game's going. So I think when you hear that first 15, I think at some point, especially like with Holmgren, at some point, like, you were going to run those damn plays. You know, in the first quarter, you were going to see those 15 plays. But I think as that has evolved, and you have so much more variability in personnel and formations now than you did back then, then certainly, you know, you can get to a handful of those. But really, you're trying to pick, when you pick your first 15, you're going to probably have, all right, what's my first, you know, third and short call? What's my first red zone call? Change of possession. What's my play? And those are probably going to be baked into your first 15 now, maybe more so than they used to.
Gotcha. No, that makes a ton of sense. So we've seen this Packers team now for 4 weeks. Like I said, it has been a little bit disjointed with how it's gone through the first 4 weeks. What for you, what do you maybe, you know, maybe confident in from what you've seen through the first 4 weeks? And maybe what are you maybe having a little bit more concerns on through 4 weeks than maybe you were expecting?
Oh, that's a good question. When I watch film, I've told you this before, I don't really get to watch it as a fan. I just try to watch how to beat people. So what I look at is, like, from a defensive standpoint, I think they just play harder than they used to. I think we talked about it last week. Even this week, they didn't play. What I mean, you see things in the secondary that are just absolute head scratchers, and just the way that they're, like, even the safety drops sometimes, like, what are we doing? Right. But they're playing hard now with the ineffectiveness at the pass rush that I think a lot of people are talking about. Like, Rashawn Gary getting a 3-point stance and not getting any sacks right now is blowing my mind. Like, the fact that he couldn't beat O'Neal for the second year in a row is just, my mind can't register why that's happening, because I watched both of them on tape and I'm like, this one of these people are a lot better than the other. And you just keep doing the same thing. Like, it's, you know, what's the definition of insanity? So that probably is the biggest surprise to me, is our ineffectiveness at the pass rush. I love that we play as hard as we do. I think you see some of the young guys, like Devontae Wyatt in particular, is a guy that even this last week, you just see an effort level. It's a little bit different, and maybe that's a proxy for the rest of the team. I like the linebacker play so far this year, much more so than last year. That's probably because Isaiah McDuffie's in, and I'm a big fan of his. Offensively, look, you just don't know what you're going to get without the quarterback healthy. Obviously, Jaden Reed's a huge, huge weapon. Going into this first quarter, the end of the first quarter of the season here, like, he's a difference maker that you have to game plan for. Josh Jacobs is not necessarily, I'm all by myself. Hello, hello. Josh Jacobs is not necessarily the same type of player as Aaron Jones, but a very effective runner. You see some of the jump cuts that he can make in the hole, and he's just a powerful guy. So you have weapons on offense, and you have to be at least, I don't think the offensive line has lost them a football game yet. And you going into this year, if you were going to point to the weakness of the offense, you had to say the offensive line. And, you know, maybe you said backup tight end. I don't know. But, like, you have to say offensive line was maybe the question mark. And I don't know that they've played lights out, but they, you know, they're not moving a lot of humans off the ball necessarily, but they're finding what they're good at, and they're not losing ball games.
Yeah, I think so too. And I was actually pretty excited about overall how the O-line has played for the first month. In the past, it has been sometimes an issue where they don't come out the way that you sort of expect them to, and then it kind of takes the length of the season for them to start getting into a rhythm. I feel like they've come out, for the most part, much better than they usually do in that first month, and I thought this was overall a good game. They got beat on some blitzes, but I didn't think they got beat one-on-one very often in this game. I want to go back to Rashawn Gary. My apologies. My internet cut out for a second, so I didn't get to
hear. Oh, I got it all to myself, Andy. You can't imagine what I said when you're
on. I'm so excited to listen back. My mind's going to be blown. But just to go back to Rashawn Gary. So I've been talking about this a bunch. So one sack in his last 11 games. I know sacks aren't everything. I know there's pressures, and I know last week he gets a sack taken away because of a Preston Smith penalty, and a pressure that he had led to an LVN sack. But you're talking about a player that we've seen, like, he can win converting speed to power. He can run through your face. He can get after the quarterback. He brings great energy. And right now, again, from an 11 game perspective, he just has not had that impact. I mean, is this a Rashawn Gary thing? Is this the defense has to figure out ways to get him in more advantageous situations? Because to me, it just, that's the guy that has to be a big time impact playmaker on your defensive line. Hey friends, I know week four didn't go Green Bay's way, but we are on to week five, and that means another chance for a victory, and of course, another chance for some wins on Prize Picks. Did you know that you can win 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as few as four correct picks? Listen, Prize Picks is the best way to get in on the action, and what I love is that they always put their members first. That includes fast, safe, and secure withdrawals, and when my picks hit, I can get my money in as little as 15 minutes. So this week, I'm definitely going to get in on some WNBA playoff action. That goes without saying. But I also want to go with Romeo Doubs in week five in LA. Romeo is due for a big game and some big time red zone production. He tore it up in training camp with his red zone ability. He is due, and I think he is going to get those touchdowns this week in LA. Whoever you decide to choose, just remember, you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly when you play $5. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks to get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It's guaranteed. Prize Picks, run your game. What's going on, everybody? I am so insanely happy that football is back. And as excited as I am right now, I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am to be back at Lambeau Field. And this year, I'm going to be taking my oldest son to his first ever regular season game, and that moment is going to mean so much to me. Thankfully, as I search for tickets to the game, Game Time has a brand new feature called Game Time Picks that makes getting tickets to see your favorite teams play live even easier. I'm actually scrolling through Game Time right now as we speak, and there are two tickets exactly in the section where I want, and it's currently listed as one of their amazing deals. Section 137, two tickets, and it's just so insanely easy to navigate and find amazing seats at the best prices, plus have the exact view of the seats you're purchasing. I can see them right now. And my absolute favorite part, Game Time has the lowest price guarantee. You'll get the lowest price to the game, or Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. So take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY, P-A-C-K-A-D-A-Y, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. What time is it? Game Time.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think both of those have to be true. So when your guy's struggling, you always move him closer to the center because the pass blockers are usually worse. Like why he doesn't line up over the right guard, I have no idea. Like they did that last year in the first game, and I think that's why he got his first sack. So you do have to do some of that, and you haven't really seen a NASCAR package with this group, which is, you know, quite frankly, kind of odd. Sean Gary came off a leg injury, and we don't know. I could very easily, and I don't want to, but you could tie that together with kind of his lack of, let's just say, wiggle in pass rush. Not that he was ever a big kind of hippie guy, but he has yet to consistently find a way to press the pocket without going over the top. And, you know, Sam Darnold's first run for a first down this week was a perfect example of, when you're rushing four and two of your guys are 3 yards over the top of the quarterback, then the space created because you didn't collapse the pocket at the level, the space created for a guy like Sam Darnold, who is, last time I checked, is not known as a rushing quarterback, to run for 15 yards and get chased out by your two linebackers. Like, that's a fundamental problem with how he goes about his business of trying to get sacks. And so I know he puts a ton of work in the offseason. I know he has, you know, guys that are trying to teach him how to, you know, to work these pass rush moves and whatnot. And I would just implore them to maybe stop overthinking this and make it a really simple sport of get him, you know, pick a spot, get to your edge, and then start collapsing the pocket. Because if you think about just from a physical standpoint, what he brings to the table, for me, it's powerful through the hips. He has long limbs and arm. You know, he can create good leverage out of a 2 or a 3 point, and we're just not seeing that very often with the way that he rushes.
I could not agree more. I've said some of the very similar things. It just feels like he wants to be a speed rusher at times and get around the edge and try to bend, and it just isn't who he is at all. And he's not a finesse guy. He's not a guy that's going to win with a bunch of different unique moves. He's just a run through your face, collapse the pocket guy, but he doesn't seem to want to play that way, which is just the most bizarre thing in the world when he's had success playing that way. And there are these stretches where he goes through where it's like, want to be a speed rusher. And yeah. I don't know. Is there anything from, and like, I think you'll definitely be able to help with this and you know, allow to fix my lack of knowledge on this topic. Is there anything that the Packers can do from lining him up wider that would help? Is there anything that putting him back in a 2-point stance would help? Or is this just, hey, you know what? I don't care if you're standing up, hand in the dirt, wide, mm-hmm. closer to the line, you got to go out and beat the guy across from you.
Let me say it the right way. So Rashawn Gary, when you're pass rushing, my number one concern from a pass rush standpoint, because he doesn't have a lot of moves.
Right.
And Cam Wake didn't have a lot of moves, right? You get to a spot. If the guy's a certain way, you do one thing. If he's another way, you do something else. Like there's a move and a counter.
Yep.
And you can go to the Hall of Fame if you want doing that. Rashawn Gary is not, and I'm a huge Rashawn Gary fan.
Yep.
And I wish I could sit down and talk to him. Because as a person who has to pass block, he is doing people like me a favor with the way that he gets off the football, with the way that his initial move up field, like everything he does, you're doing me a favor by the way that you move.
Yep.
He's never been a good get off guy from a 2-point stance. That's why I was so excited when he would get in the three. The problem is the way that he wants to rush is for the most part straight up field. You remember when Enikbari went inside last week?
Yep.
You've never seen Rashawn Gary do that. Not once this year. And guys can wide set him. They can set back. They can turn. And he'll only try to get back inside at the very top. And so when you're playing football, like an offensive lineman versus a defensive end, I'm just trying to get to my spot under control. And there's nothing that he can do from a speed perspective that is going to change what I want to do, because he's not getting off the ball fast enough. And because of that, you have to – so, like, in other words, Andy, if the line of scrimmage is here and I want to meet you here and I'm getting there every time, well, I got to change this angle. So I got to bring it back down here. I got to make it closer. I got to make you do something earlier. I have to make you uncomfortable. And he's not doing that at all. So you have to change your rush angle. You have to change your angle and your stance. So we call it an angle rush very simply. But you have to change the angle of your rush. You have to make the impact happen before the offensive tackle really wants or is comfortable doing it. Right now, you're meeting him at the spot that he wants to meet you at every single time, and that's why he doesn't have success.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. So PFF has him charted for 172 snaps so far, 6 at right outside linebacker, 10 at right end outside, 2 at right end, 67 at left outside linebacker, 78 at left end outside, 8 at left end, 1 at defensive left tackle. So 1 snap out of 172 where he's maybe lined up somewhere in a non-traditional, basically defensive end or outside linebacker spot. So yeah, definitely do not do it a lot. I could probably look up last year's too if we wanted, but the point being, he doesn't do it basically at all.
Yeah, and I don't know that, you know, you don't think, like, when I watch him, you know, it's like you ever watch Swingers and they're talking to John Favreau about how he's a bear with the claws. He doesn't know how to kill the bunny.
Yep.
You know, it's like you want to tell him, like, man, you're a bear, man. You got these big fangs and claws. Like, go kill the bunny, man. Just go do it. But as long as you continue that high rush and don't have the speed to get around the corner, it's just going to be easy for offensive tackles to play defense against you. I mean, it is what it is. You got to change what you're doing. If it's not working, you got to change it up. At least try to do something different.
Yeah, going back to last year too, including this year, 847 total snaps, only 3 on the interior per PFF. I want to talk to you about Sean Ryan on the offensive line. Mm-hmm. We talked about it a little bit, how the offensive line is again playing pretty well through the course of these first 4 games. A few weeks ago, mentioned some of Ryan's hand placement wasn't great. I still think there's things that he can clean up there. Felt like in his first 2 games in full-time action, though, he's kind of responded, done a little bit better. What did you see out of Sean Ryan over these past couple weeks?
Yeah, if you watch him last year, he can kind of stick to you in pass pro. He gets his hands outside. Hand placement isn't great. Gets a, you know, his base is pretty good. Bend is pretty good. So he can battle, I think, in pass pro for the most part. He can get pushed back like everybody else, because if you don't have inside hands, you're going to. He's improving. I mean, I think the big deal is that he's improving. You see some, you know, you play against Jeffrey Simmons and you're going to get pushed around a little bit. He did. Everybody does. But you're going to get pushed around a little bit. This week, listen, Harrison Phillips is a good player. You know, they have good players on the interior defensive line. They got – what you see now is, like, maybe you're not getting beaten on the basic stuff. You're getting beat on the tackle-tackle game or the tackle-tackle bite game when, you know, in the run where you got to you know, hold for an extra second and then get to the linebacker late. Like, that kind of – those kind of more nuanced plays that you have to practice, and the communication is really, really important in those things. That is probably, you know, the next big step he has to take. He's certainly not, you know, a dominant player by any means at this point, but I think he's more than played his way into earning, you know, the amount of reps that he's getting now. Obviously, Morgan's hurt, but I think when they come back, they'd be making a mistake at this point to start, you know, trading him in and out, because you don't want to mess up the continuity of gameplay as it pertains to not necessarily just Sean Ryan, but also, is Josh Myers playing okay right now? Do you like what Zach Tom's doing on the backside of the B's and all the double teams and stuff? If those are going well, then plug and play from a development standpoint, because he's a first round pick, doesn't necessarily make sense to me.
We are once again in lockstep. I'm with you. I think Jordan Morgan getting back would be great for the depth. If any of those guys do go down, having that ability to have Morgan step in, I think would be really important. But right now, I like the way that Ryan's playing. I like the way really that the offensive line as a whole is playing. I wouldn't mess with it. And I know that they like to do some of those rotations and get some of those guys snaps and keep the competition going. But the way that he's played these last couple of weeks, I think I'd be more prone to just say, you know what, let's keep it going the way that it's going. And there's going to be injuries through the course of the season, and Jordan Morgan will be able to fill in as needed when there are. Let's talk about everyone's favorite topic, which of course is the kicking game, and specifically field goals and extra points. Extra points have been good so far. Have you been part of a situation where the field goal kicker just can't make kicks? And if so, like, what does that do to the psyche of a team where, like, first drive, you drive down 10 plays, get into the red zone, and a 37 yarder clanks off the post. And again, by the time you touch the ball next, it's 14-0 opposition. Obviously the 14 points isn't on the kicker, but, when you just have a kicker that can't make kicks, what does that do for a team?
Well, I mean, it's like, I know that's not on the kicker, but if you look at the beginning of this game, between that, McDuffie drops the pick on the sideline, or, you know, I don't know if he dropped it, but he could have had one right there. Then, you know, you throw the other pick, you start looking at the beginning of the game, like, that's why you lose a ball game.
Yeah.
I mean, really, you start trading out points right there. That's why you're losing games. Opportunity against good teams, you got to take the opportunities. I was so lucky when I played. I had John Casey in Carolina. Obviously, I had Longwell here. We had Lindo Mari in Miami, in Seattle. He was a Miami guy for years.
Yep.
So I was very fortunate to have guys that could – you were very reliable. So, like, when let's say Longwell did miss a kick, which didn't happen very often.
No.
He just kind of went, you didn't even think about it. But I would say this. It does – if a guy misses a kick, what happens to the offense is – you go, hey, we're not settling for a kick anymore. We're going to start pressing because we don't want – 32-yard line is no longer good enough. It used to be the – you get to the 32, I can make it. It was kind of the, like Longo used to – I think Longo would say, in the grass, in the weather, 32-yard line, I can make it every time. So we knew we had to get to the 32. But, you know, if you got somebody else who's not making that kick and it's third and eight on the 35 and you know you got 3 yards to the 32 or you got 8 yards for a first down, the quarterback's probably going for the 8. You know, and I think that's where it affects the team, that you probably doesn't show up in the stats.
Yeah, and there were opportunities too for them, and they were down by a bunch at the time, so it probably played into the calculus as well. But they had opportunities for some long 40 yarders and did not attempt them and went for it on fourth down instead. So again, I think the score probably played even more of an indicator in that. Yeah. But even still, the confidence, I don't know, that it seems like Matt LaFleur still has confidence. They're obviously keeping him on the team. They worked out two kickers on Tuesday. It certainly looks like Narveson's going to be the kicker this coming Sunday against LA, but this definitely cost him points against Philly. Who knows how that game would have changed? It cost some points in this one. Who knows how this game would have changed? But they got to figure something out there, because this is in a tight league where I think Green Bay is going to be in a lot of competitive close games this year.
Yeah.
And those points are going to be massive, and it's already hurt them in two of the four games that they've been a part of so far.
Well, if you look back in the last, I don't know, maybe LaFleur's entire tenure, if you look at what has been the worst part of the football team, if you have all three, it's special teams has been the worst part every time.
Yeah.
Hands down. And the only thing that was a reprieve, and I know they brought in Rich Bisaccia, and it was a big deal because of, you know, the Raiders interim head coach and what a leader. It's all fantastic, right?
Yeah.
And the really the only shot in the arm you've gotten is Keyshawn Nixon was returning kickoffs, you know, back when the kickoffs were old school.
Yep.
He was doing a great job as a kick returner, but that was the only bright spot on that unit for years. Now, it's not to say that every play was bad, but consistently they were a bottom feeder unit. They were a bottom 10 unit. And obviously, if you need to invest in, like, there's a reason that Raiders are idiots, but they did invest in Janikowski in the first round years and years ago because he played for 20 years and he made a whole lot of kicks for him that were a big deal. And if you need to invest, I'm not saying a first rounder, but if you need to go and actually invest in one of these guys, because maybe kicking in Lambeau is a little bit differently than kicking ever, you know, different than kicking at other places, then I just feel like you would be so sad as an organization. Goody would be so miserable if, you know, it was the Minnesota Vikings Giants NFC Championship or whatever all those years ago when they missed the field goal to not go to the Super Bowl with Carter and Moss and all those guys. You remember that? It's like if that happens to us, someone will probably die outside Lambeau.
You're probably not wrong. I wonder if they can't, you know, if the Carolina Panthers continue to blow it, I'm wondering if they can't maybe make a trade for like Eddie Pinheiro. He's set to be a free agent after the year. Can you maybe do something like that to get somebody in? Pinheiro is so far 6 of 6 on field goals with a long of 48, 7 of 7 on extra points. Last year, he was 25 of 29 with a long of 56. He was only 17 of 20 on extra points last year, but I still think any upgrade would be a pleasant surprise at this point. I don't know. It's a bad position to be in. You never want to be caught in the position where you don't have a kicker because you can't just find one, but they're going to have to do everything in their power to do it or get Narvison kicking the way that apparently they think he can, because a 37 yarder in the NFL is unacceptable. You got to find a way to make your kicks and not going the way I think anyone is hoping for right now. All right, let's take a look ahead to Packers Rams and then we'll get you out of here. What are you looking for in this game and what can Green Bay do to have success?
Well, first off, when you watch the Rams, at least last week, Sean McVay is continuing to kind of evolve that offense. He was, you know, he kind of started this whole, it feels like Shanahan started this thing, but it all kind of got popularized when McVay made his debut, young coach and all of that. And now when you look at it, he's kind of going back old school. They're running a lot of 12 personnel. They're running a lot under center. There's a ton of play action pass. They're running a lot of screen game. So they've evolved a little bit as well. Matthew Stafford's still a top five thrower of the football in the National Football League. Obviously they have weapons outside. What's interesting is the last year, and it kind of goes unnoticed, is they're actually a pretty good running football team. If you watch them, I'm going to do a breakdown tomorrow. And if you just kind of watch the end zone copy of how they attack, they're quite good at double teaming and getting movement off the ball and just being, they're not, you know, not dominant, but solid guys up front. So I think defensively, this is not going to be an easy day. If the safeties don't do a better job of covering for one another when we drop down, and I mean by covering is like getting to the middle of the field and being able to kind of cover a whole range of passes. A guy like Matthew Stafford is going to eat you alive. They play a lot of short stuff, obviously, because they don't have necessarily the wheels that the Minnesota Vikings do outside, but he doesn't miss on routes. He's just a guy who throws every ball, looks like it's damn perfect ball. So I think that's going to be different. Aaron Donald not being there has a monster impact on that team. The guy, they had two rookies last year that were good. They are good players, but you know, they had their sack numbers were up and they were elevated. And when you watch them, you go, as an offensive lineman, you kind of go, but they have Aaron Donald. So it'll be interesting to see how, the Green Bay Packers in for the first time are going to have, you know, Jordan Love healthy with a full week of practice, all that kind of go. You would expect they score a lot of points next week against a team that, you know, as so far, especially last week with the team that they're playing against, playing a lot of too high. There's a lot of opportunities to run the football. So Josh Jacobs, look for him to break 100 yards next week. And then, you know, I would think that Jordan Love's going to have a good bounce back game.
I think so too. I think this is, I don't know if it's a get right game or I just think getting again in some rhythm I do think they can take advantage of this Rams defense. Matt LaFleur has done really, really well against the Rams and Sean McVay in his career. So hopefully that continues this week. And I'm with you. I think this defensive game, I mean, obviously you're happy that Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp are not playing in this one. Mm-hmm. Definitely gives you a reprieve. We'll see where Green Bay's secondary is at. If they can get Jair or Carrington Valentine back, that would be very nice if they could get either of those guys back. But either way, they're going to have to still be prepared to stop the run. And with potentially no Devontae Wyatt, I think it's going to be a big week for Kenny Clark and TJ Slayton in the middle, eating some of those double teams, having to hold up and keep things clear for the linebackers on the second level.
Yeah, they really need to. The linebacker play has improved. Cooper, you know, Cooper's still a young guy. You can tell he's going to be a good player. It's just like, you got to get these guys reps. Like, you got to get Bullard reps. You got to get Williams reps. You got to get, they have to get reps. If you were to shine a spotlight on one person right now, it'd be Eric Stokes. Eric Stokes would be the guy I'd want to shine a spotlight on and just see. I really want to, as a locker room guy, I really want to see some accountability from a physicality standpoint. There's just too many plays where you're like, man, it's time to go. It's time to go. It's time to sell. It's time to be physical. You got to run through blocks. You got to make tackles. You got to, you're singled up on the outside. I know he's a good player, but don't look at the ref like you're confused why they're throwing multiple flags on you. Like, this is part of the game. This is what you signed up for. I think it's put up or shut up time here for him pretty soon.
I said, I'm ready, I think, for Carrington Valentine to take that spot once he gets back healthy. And yeah. I still think Stokes can maybe have a role. I think there's some matchups that he could maybe do a little bit better on, but there's just holes in his game and other teams can attack those. I think sometimes a little bit too easily. And I don't know that Valentine's like this perfect, solution either, but that's probably the direction I would go a little bit more, but those guys got to get healthy first. Otherwise, if you're going to end up with a lot of Eric Stokes and Corey Ballantyne on the outside, yeah, you're going to end up in some disadvantageous matchups. And certainly we saw that last week against Minnesota. Mike, tremendous stuff as always. Always appreciate having you on and all of your insights, and especially when you can just take over when my internet goes dead. Where can we find all of your incredible work on the YouTube channel and over on social media?
Yeah, check out the Process to Perform YouTube channel. Block Party's preview will be out tomorrow. We just did our last show about this unfortunate loss where we spotted them 28. And check me out, MikeWall68 on Twitter, Process to Perform on Instagram. Andy, always fun, man.
Always fun. Appreciate you a ton. Make sure to follow all of his work. It's absolutely awesome. The film breakdowns are worth the price of admission and worth checking out every single week. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. Again, you can find Mike at MikeWall68. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go. We'll be right back.